Support for Iditapod, a production of Alaska Public Media, comes from MVFCU. Experience the MVFCU way.
Welcome to the Iditapod, a podcast about what else? The Iditarod. I'm your host, Davis Hovey. That's perfect.
I'm Casey Grove, the real host of the Iditapod. That's our new friend, Davis Hovey. Welcome to the Iditapod. We are a production of Alaska Public Media and KNOM Radio in Nome. Before we jump into today's episode, here's a word from our sponsor.
Support for Iditapod 2018 comes from Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, taking pride in its strong ties to Alaska's communities.
Alaska Public Media and KNOM are again joining forces to bring you coverage of the last great race. This is our fourth podcast of the season so far, and the race started today. So we're now switching over to daily episodes. We'll have a new installment every morning with the latest news straight from the Iditarod Trail. Our reporters on the trail this year are Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes, and you just heard him, KNOM's news director, Davis Hovey. We have both of them in the studio today. Hi, guys.
Hey, happy to be there.
That's Davis's voice. Davis, where do you live?
Nome, Alaska, currently.
Have you ever done anything like this before?
No, this will be my first time on the trail, and just even being here for the ceremonial start in Anchorage was fantastic, so I'm excited for everything coming my way.
So this is your first time seeing the ceremonial start in downtown Anchorage, is that right?
Yeah, correct.
So that was today. It kicks off the race, does not count toward the official timing in the race. But it's a pretty wild spectacle, if I do say so myself. And I wanted to ask you guys, what was that like? What did it look like? What did it sound like? What did it smell like?
Davis, why don't you go first? The impression is fresh with you.
Yeah, I guess as the young blood, I think that for me, everything was fresh and new. And I was just amazed by the people from all over the state, the mushers who are representing all different parts of the country and different countries in themselves, just the different types of fanfare and pandemonium, and the fact that for me, coming from Nome, there was also a strong representation of Nomites.
It was in the 20s today, overcast. In fact, at the end of the race, it started snowing. Mm. It's still snowing as we're recording this, and just a really kind of beautiful, sort of perfect, not too cold, not too hot. Just really comfortable. And the ceremonial start, it's kind of a cross between a parade and a dog pageant. And you have a main artery of downtown Anchorage that's all roped off. And then on side streets, all these mushers with their teams and their handlers are set up. And there's people on the sidewalks behind fences, little wooden fences, looking on and talking to the mushers and getting posters signed. And it's a couple of hours of really accessible viewing of, you know, the mushers before they head out in the wilderness and are not seen so much. So I don't know what to say other than it was really good weather for the ceremonial start.
It was, yeah. There have been years where it's been pretty chilly. There have been years where it's so warm that the snow's melting and there's giant puddles everywhere. And it was like in the mid-20s. It was really nice. I was out on the trail a little bit, you know, talking to folks that were out barbecuing and slapping high fives with the mushers. And we'll get to that here in a little bit.
The worst thing, though, is when it starts to really get slushy and mushy and the pavement starts coming through and you're reminded that you're not in a winter wonderland. You're in the middle of, like, yeah, a city that's very ill-equipped for the task at hand. And the mushers who are going over, like, asphalt towards the very end when the trail's been really pulverized are just kind of like, I can't believe you make me mush over, like, cement in Anchorage.
They do a good job of just dumping a ton of snow on the streets, which seems totally backwards. I was just yesterday talking to the street maintenance manager who oversees the 250 truckloads of snow that get dumped down there, 5,000 cubic yards, and it just transforms it from 4th Avenue, which is one of the busiest streets in Alaska, to this dog mushing course through downtown.
Yeah, you had a good news story about the paradox for maintenance workers who spend all their time getting told to, you know, move the snow off the road faster, and then there's this one night of the year when they have to come in and dump the snow back on the road.
Yeah,
and then clean it up again.
And they take pride in it. It's this tradition. We had somewhat normal Iditarod ceremonial start today, but there was one thing that was a little bit different, and that was that PETA was there.
PETA was there.
People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
Yeah, and we knew that. The group had been calling reporters, sending press releases. They'd been in touch. They'd made it known that they were coming to express their displeasure with the Iditarod, which has long been the case, and we talked about that in an earlier episode. the buildup really kind of overshadowed what actually happened. There weren't a ton of people. There were, you know, about three people when I was there standing over tombstones, five tombstones for each of the five dogs they say died during last year's Iditarod. And then on the ground, five stuffed dogs. It was very well arranged. At one point, they laid flowers on them, and they were standing in a perfect place for a photo op. They were standing right under the Iditarod banner at the start with the name and the logo there and the buildings framing them, and it was a very well choreographed photo op. There were not a lot of people that were out expressing sympathy. You know, they were there. There was a spokesperson who was giving interviews. I spoke with her. It was a lot of the same messaging that, frankly, I've heard from PETA's communications team in the past, and I pulled a little piece of tape.
People are naturally compassionate towards animals, and they don't want to see animals harmed. And so we're here to raise awareness about the Iditarod and to let people know the cruelty that happens behind the scenes.
So that was Tricia Lebschauer. She was one of the people on hand at the site, and where I'm not going to get into picking apart a lot of what she spoke about and what was there. You know, their message is pretty clear. They don't want the Iditarod to exist in any way that, you know, uses animals, something that they say is abusive. I heard some mushers talking a little bit remorseful that this ceremonial start going into it felt like it had been overshadowed not only by PETA, but by a lot of controversies. And one of them was speaking to somebody who felt like, you know, it really stole the thunder from this accomplishment for her that, you know, she'd worked so hard to get there and that they were going to be there and they have plans to be in Nome. She just felt like it really was kind of took the wind out of the sails on it before it even happened. I talked to other mushers who said, you know, they're going to do what they're going to do. This is just a new iteration of what they've been doing. And people on the street weren't really engaging with them too much for the maybe 20, 30 minutes that I was around and watching. Nobody was shouting at them. There was certainly nothing mean. It was very diplomatic, and I think people were just kind of curious. There's a lot of people snapping photos. One thing that did happen later on that I do find particularly amusing was I spotted a gentleman wearing a giant bear hat, like the bear's face as his hat. And I'm used to seeing, especially around Ferrande, when people are dressing up in their finest furs, and there'll be like lynx hats and fox hats and wolf hats. I had never seen a giant bear hat like this. I mean, it was really like the whole face and hung down really low. Turns out that guy kind of was trolling PETA, and he and a buddy started handing out flyers for a fur sale right in front of where their demonstration
just
was.
Just right in front of them.
Yeah, and just kind of trying to like divert people's attention and kind of rile them, but in a sort of pranking way. You know, he was very diplomatic. He was very receptive, and I have just a little bit of tape from that.
Help run them off, I guess. Me and another guy who sit here and pass out flyers and trying to counteract what they were doing.
There were no yelling or fist fights.
Oh, no, 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 no. I've First Amendment is a great, great thing in our Constitution.
But it sounded like you had a better audience.
He had as much right as I did. Yeah. And I respected what they were doing and hope they respected what I was doing. They're promoting one side, I'm promoting another side. But I'm promoting evenly. You know, I don't want people to decimate any creature.
So that gentleman goes by Ziggy. His real name is Richard Ziegler, and has worked with fur and leather. And he had a lot of points about, you know, what it means to him to take care of animals and to take care of hides and stuff like that. But I think why I like that tape and what I really liked about speaking with him was he totally was down with PETA being there. He just disagrees with them. And that was kind of the vibe that I got from all around. It's just that this particular gentleman was wearing a bear for a hat.
So that seemed pretty civil. You guys were also talking to a lot of mushers amid these thousands of race fans and 1,000-something dogs. How did it go with the mushers? What stood out to you?
Yeah, for me, I mean, this is the first year, again, that I've been at the ceremonial start. We've got 67 mushers to talk to, one of them, of course, being Dee Dee John Rowe, who has declared this is her last Iditarod race. And I think the interview that I got with her was kind of emotional, and she's got a lot of fans, of course, always around her and supporting her. Even as I approached her, you know, she was just breaking away from an embrace with a couple of young ladies who were raving about her. But anyway, she gave me an interesting quote about the late and greats who have come before her and who she's raced with over the past 35 years.
Well, this one's special because it's, you know, a graduation from an era. You know, there's a lot of people that I shared 1980 with and through the 90s with that, you know, have gone on. You know, they've graduated from this side of heaven, and, you know, I'll have a lot of memories of them along the trail. Most recently, Jim Culler, special friend, but, you know, my mom and my dad and, you know, a lot of people that have supported me over the years. And Rudy Demoska, traveled my rookie year with Rudy, and I can't even begin to name all the people. There's a lot of special memories and people along the trail, and I think that this is a race of memories.
Tell me about your team this year. Who's going to get you to Nome?
Well, my team is the team that I saved from the fire, and with few exceptions, I would say the entire team are survivors, much like myself.
Dee Dee Genro running her 35th Iditarod. She placed second a couple times back in the day. Cancer survivor, devout Christian, house burned in the Sockeye fire in 2015. Significant year for her, perennial favorite. Davis, why did that tape stick out to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're kind of at this period in Iditarod history where we're losing a lot of these great mushers who have been around for decades. And as she kind of alluded to, Dee Dee ran her rookie race in 1980 with some of the originals. I mean, the father of the Iditarod, Joe Reddington Sr., she had the pleasure of running with Rudy Demoski, the pleasure of running with Mike Williams Sr. and Rick Swenson, and so many greats that we are just not seeing today because either they've unfortunately passed away, or they're too old to run it, or they've just passed it on to new generations of family members. So I think for Dee Dee, she's kind of feeling like she is one of the last ones, and this is a very significant moment for her.
Zach, you talked to a bunch of mushers today too. What stood out to you?
Well, I just want to, I'll preface this by saying that in the next couple of episodes, Davis and I have sort of different jobs. Davis is going to be focusing a lot more on middle and back of the pack mushers, as well as mushers from Western Alaska, which falls into K&OM and his kind of territory a little bit more. I'm going to be focusing more on the front of the pack. And so I was out trying to get a lot of the people that I'll be talking with later, I suspect. People who have placed in the top 10, top 20 really aggressively the last few years. One of the people that I'm really keeping an eye on this year is Nick Petit. And so I went and I spoke with him, and I have to tell you, it was not a good interview, mostly because of me. I mean, Nick is smart, but he's not always, you know, playing the game that you're asking him to play when you're trying to interview him. And so at the end of just asking these questions that I felt were kind of dumb and just bothering his time, and I think him getting a little frustrated with me, I kind of mentioned something like, where are you going to 24? And he said, like, I'm not going to disclose that to you. But what he said after that is what I thought was really interesting.
There's really no, like, those questions. Like, I'm known for not having that answer.
I know. I've asked you every year, and you're the hardest person. You and Mitch are the hardest people to interview.
Well, I wouldn't say I'm hard to interview. Mitch has a plan. He won't tell you. I don't have a plan. I'll tell you that. That's the difference.
So after I was done shrinking like a violet, I stepped away, and I think that's such an interesting answer. Nick this year is who a lot of us are looking at because he represents an alternative to the style of mushing that, you know, veteran champion Mitch Seavey, very, very favored to win by many of us, is carrying. Mitch is extremely rigorous, extremely routine-driven, meticulous, and there's a couple of other mushers who are less predictable and less predictive. They're playing it by ear. They're testing their team. They're measuring things on the run. And in the past, we've sort of looked to Brent Sass to see, you know, if he would be able to pull it off that way. Wade Mars is somebody that people look to as a kind of alternative. And Nick, I really do believe him to some extent when he says, I don't have a plan. Now, I think what that means is I have several plans that could all work, and so I'll calibrate as I need. But that willingness and that strategizing on picking things up as they land in the race, that's going to be really interesting to see. And I think that's why so many of us are looking at Nick, not just because he had a good mid-race season, but because he's really got a kind of secret ingredient that he could be testing out, and we'll see if it pays off.
That kind of brings us to our listener question for the day related to run times and how long do mushers run during the day.
My name is Laura from Minneapolis, Minnesota. My question is, how many hours does the average musher do per day?
Great question. Depends on the day, depends on the terrain, depends where in the strategy a musher is. I know a lot of mushers run at kind of a 2-1 ratio of, if they run 8 hours, they're going to rest for 4 hours. And so that can kind of dictate a lot of terms. On top of that, you have mandatory rests throughout the race, an 8-hour, a 24-hour, and then another 8-hour along the Yukon River before a mandatory 8-hour hold in White Mountain. So how long do they run in a day? Kind of depends on the day, but hours, hours and hours and hours. Like, let's say 16 hours maybe if you're doing 8-hour runs and then taking 4-hour rests for each of those.
And they run at night too. Mm-hmm. They rest and they run kind of based on their schedule, and they lose a lot of sleep because they're doing dog chores, and they might just go all night long. And years when it's real warm during the day, the sun's beating down, they might choose to try to run more at night.
Yeah, a lot of mushers will, especially on longer runs, time them for nights, which may sound counterintuitive to those of us that walk in the day and like warm sunshine. But for mushers, the daytime can often be a better rest. Dogs prefer cooler temperatures to get at their kind of optimal levels. And if there's sunshine, it can be kind of nice to just sleep, both for the musher and for the dogs. They don't have to, you know, use as much energy. It's just more pleasant to sleep for the mushers and for the dogs. So during the day is actually sometimes more restful. And then during the night is when a lot of those super runs happen.
And you hear about these guys out on the runners on a crisp night, sky's clear, the aurora's out, and it just sounds great.
Yeah, I remember talking to people last year, and I think it was Wade Mars who mentioned that a lot of the time if the moon's bright or if there's an aurora overhead, in the dead of night, he'll just shut off his headlamp and just only hear the sound of his dogs running, illuminated by the heavenly bodies overhead.
And that is the epitome of the Alaskan sport that we are so privileged to get to cover this year.
While you guys were downtown, I was out more along maybe the middle of the trail that goes through Anchorage, and I caught up with some of the race revelers. They call themselves Trail Gators, and put together this audio postcard.
This is Trailgate. We come here and we celebrate all of the mushing for the Iditarod, and we just have fun, and we always pick a theme this year, so this year is out of this world, can you tell? I'm a Trekkie, Uhura. Yes, here goes my black satchel. You've got a little bit of Star Wars, a little bit everyone making things up. So yeah, we do it every year. You should always come over and say hi.
Well, early on, I had some hat tricks where I gave 3 out per team. Yeah, the handler, the musher, and the rider. Recently, it's been a little light.
It's a mixed bag. I had a fellow who already had something in one hand and then took the PBR with his other hand. I'm not quite sure how he was holding onto the sled at that point, but he was going for it.
Number 32, starting his 21st Iditarod, Jim Lanier out of Chugiak, Alaska.
Brats, you know, couches, dogs. It's kind of what we do down here this time of year. You know how it is.
That's the breakfast of champions right there.
Yeah, I think everybody here is getting more and more kids, so the everything is, staying on the down low.
Well, I am passing out hot dogs. We've had a lot of takers, definitely. Martin Boozer took a hot dog, and I'm definitely rooting for Martin Boozer, Didi Johnro, and... Yeah. Well, fun because you get to meet all sorts of different mushers, see the dogs. They were so cute.
Good luck.
Well, we love hearing from race fans, whether they're out on the trail or by email or voice memo. So this is where I want to remind folks that we're again hoping to connect with the listeners by getting your questions about the race. Those can be in email form or even better as a recorded voice memo. So if you've got a question, send it to us at iditarod@alaskapublic.org. So I have a question. What is in store for the next couple days?
Well, we are recording this on Saturday, and on Sunday, Davis and I are going to go to the restart in Willow and see the real start of the race as everyone leaves. And then Davis is going to drop me off with pilot Rob, and I'm going to fly over to Yentna and Squentna for the first night and then be on the trail for the foreseeable future.
And it ain't over till it's over. And then for me, the trail doesn't begin truly until Tuesday. So then I join Zach in McGrath.
So you and I will be hanging out tomorrow. This is our last in-studio interview with Zach. So good luck, happy trails, be safe. Try to get some sleep and eat a little bit while you're filing those stories. We're looking forward to hearing them. Well, thanks to Davis Hovey and Zachariah Hughes for being on today. If you're not already, you can subscribe to the IdentiPod at iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also listen online at alaskapublic.org. Our theme music is by the band Sassafras. I'm Casey Grove. Catch you next time.
Wait, what are you asking me?
Wait, who's got the best beer on the trail?
These guys, Nome, Alaska, the Nome crew. Nome is home, and this is where these guys are from. Where I'm going. Oh, shut the front door. Great. Love, Zachariah. Your name's Casey. Oh, you are doing IdentiPod. Solid. Well, I listened to your voice.
I don't want to delay it too much, but.
Another dog team. Yeah.
All right. Here we go. Team time.
Yeah, they're pretty stoked. Want to go?
They're not going to be able to pass it.
Good luck, guys.
No, but they just get
it. Okay, we got to go.
Chuck, get me to the light, girl.
All right,
we'll see you
all right.
Home.
See you guys.
Good luck.
Go fast.